This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. The growth of news deserts across many parts of Illinois has been well documented. We've talked about it on this show several times, but you can probably see it yourself in your hometown paper. If it's still publishing, it's likely a shell of its former self. With that collapse, along with cuts in commercial radio and television news, has come the closure of an important communication channel for local government. 20 years ago, if we had, say, a global pandemic, public health authorities would have gone to local media to get the word out about what to do. But today, with fewer options, many local health departments are instead relying on Facebook. And my next guest says that has some real downsides. For one thing, there's a certain amount of knowledge required to maximize reach on the platform. It also means that a carefully worded statement from someone with, say, a PhD in epidemiology can be undermined by a commenter with a Q profile picture and a dangerous misunderstanding of statistics. And there's more. It's all collected in the new report, Fighting COVID-19 in Illinois, a case study of local health department officials' reliance on Facebook. It was published by the Center for Journalism and Liberty and co-authored by Nikki Usher. Usher is a professor of communications at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. I should say a newly promoted full professor. Congratulations, Nikki. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Is there like a ceremony where the dean like taps a sword on your shoulder or something? Something like that?
I think you get to have a book in the library with your name on it, like that's all.
Okay. Well, listeners, you guys, you can join our conversation, 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. All right, let's briefly paint a picture of the media landscape today. How dry are Illinois' news deserts?
Well, so actually compared relative to other states in the Midwest, we're not that bad. I think the bigger issue is what these news outlets are capable of. So if you think about outside Chicago and the collar counties, only 12% of those counties, and which is like 1.8 million people, have access to a daily newspaper. So that's 12% of people in like all of the other counties that are not Chicagoland who don't have a daily paper that's responsive to their everyday needs. And so some of the most important issues that are changing day to day may not be getting to them simply because the outlets that they might turn to are just too small, under-resourced, and have never published at the speed we might need them to in a fast-growing global pandemic.
And then there's also this issue of the decline of trust in media, and I would argue the increasing polarization of media consumption that's part of this problem too, right? You had this Central Illinois public health official who said, we tried to avoid news sources altogether just because of the polarization they're dealing with.
I mean, this is what broke my heart, right? And you're doing interviews with people, and from a scholarly perspective, you kind of don't interject. You kind of just let them keep talking, you know, new official after official I spoke to said that they wanted to post, quote, factual information. And what they meant by that was something from John Hopkins or from IDPH or from, you know, some CDC, something like that. But that there was something like less factual about journalism, even if it were, say, from, you know, the Chicago Tribune or another well-regarded source. So that alone worried me, that kind of sort of self-censorship of what counted as good information, but also kind of the extension of that, which you just mentioned, which is this idea that posting journalism could cause a comment conflagration. Like, I mean, it's just like really, really terrifying, right? We can't post journalism because it's going to make people angry. It's terrifying.
Yeah. It's certainly disheartening for myself being in this field. You know, maybe we should just take a moment to sort of explain the methodology here. This is you did a survey and interviews of local health department officials in downstate Illinois, right?
Yeah. So this is part of a larger project that my research team has been up to called Platforms, Politics, and Local News in Illinois. And we're actually a part of the Illinois Local News Task Force. So it's one of these many subsets. And so I spoke to 18 rural public health department officials representing 29 counties. Illinois has 102 counties, so we're talking about like 30% of counties of the state. So it's a pretty good representation. And we just, you know, I had a set of questions that I asked, the same set of questions to every single public health department official, just trying to draw out some systematic findings. And over and over again, what we heard was they feel like they have no choice but to rely on Facebook. Facebook is more efficient at reaching larger numbers of people, even those who are not on Facebook, because somebody on Facebook, you know, is on Facebook in their families or something like that. And sort of the inability to really use trusted, what we would like to hope would be trusted local media in an efficient way for communicating health information.
Some of the problems you identify here, and this is, you're too professional to use this term, but I'm going to call them the OK Boomer problem. And this is where people like create the wrong kind of Facebook account, and then their account was disappeared for a while in the middle of the pandemic.
Well, so I don't think this is an OK Boomer thing. I think this is Facebook having real ideas about how it wants organizations to maintain presences on the platform. And not every organization is going to have the wherewithal or knowledge to do exactly what Facebook wants of, you know, posting its address and, you know, listing it under the, you know, is it a medical organization? Is it a business? Is it a government organization? Right? Facebook has these drop down options. And so it's really hard if you're just a, you know, a small staff who is setting up a page hoping to provide a community resource and Facebook decides they don't like your settings, right?
And you talked to one who landed in Facebook jail, they put it, right?
Yeah. So their page was pulled off of Facebook until they reset it in the way that Facebook preferred. And that's a problem because not everybody is up on the latest information, but also taking a Facebook page of a public health department offline because it wasn't like right according to Facebook in the middle of the pandemic. I mean, that's the kind of logic that these platform companies operate under, right? There's no shades of gray. There's, at least in terms of like what they want to see as, you know, engaging content or whatever it might be, or the way they want to position government organizations to best reach people. And for most people, we can't call up Facebook and say, hey, this broke, right? Hey, I don't understand what I did wrong. And that presents a real problem for, you know, state officials maybe have a better chance, but your local public health department in a county of, you know, maybe 30,000, they don't have much leverage with asking Facebook for help.
Right, as Facebook is also resolving disputes, you know, along this line and even more serious in places around the world, right? People are using Facebook to incite genocides. I mean, it's got these problems everywhere. But yeah, go ahead.
Well, I mean, I think the big issue is that we tend to think about misinformation and polarization and distrust and hate on Facebook and these other social media platforms kind of detached from geography. Like they kind of happen in a world out there, right? And in reality, the effect of all of that happens in our local communities. So we can be really concerned about, you know, propaganda, encouraging all sorts of crazy, awful things. But ultimately, when it starts to affect the interpersonal actions of people in a community, That's sort of like talking about misinformation at scale is one thing, but talking about misinformation in communities where people really trust each other and decide to no longer do that because of COVID masking protocols, it's like that's where kind of the problem really unfolds in people's everyday lives.
Yeah, that's such a great point. These things that, you know, we hear discussed on podcasts and national talk shows and in books, really coming home to our own communities. All right, let me take a moment to reintroduce Nikki Usher, who is a professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, co-author of the report Fighting COVID-19 in Illinois, a case study of local health department officials' reliance on Facebook, published by the Center for Journalism and Liberty. We'll have a link to that on our website, 21stshow.org. In the time we have remaining, I want to get to like one more of the problems you identify and then some of the solutions. And this one jumped out at me. It was this idea that, you know, commenting is such an important part of the Facebook platform. And, you know, it's fine when people are talking about cute baby photos or, you know, get a load of this type news stories. But when public health agencies are posting information and just anyone can come in there and reply, there are real questions about what the authorities can do about that, right?
Well, so we've got really great FOIA laws in the state of Illinois, which means Freedom of Information Act request, right? You can get any government, like my emails, you can request and get them. You have a right to them because they're state communication. Please don't. But, you know, you can do the same thing for any public agency. And so there's a real question that hasn't really been, you know, communicated for the social media age. What's the decision? Do local public health officials or sheriff's offices or whatever it might be need to keep every single comment in some way in order to be in compliance with Freedom of Information requests? Do they need to keep them visible to the community? And I think that there's a real lack of clarity. Can you just delete a member of the public's comments if it's complete misinformation or outright harassment, right? Is it okay?
If they go to talk at a city meeting or a county board meeting or something and they speak into the record, that's definitely part of the record.
Right. So what does that then mean when you're on, how does that translate to social media, right? And this is part of a much larger conversation we're having right now nationally, right? Like, how is social media different from the things that happen in real life? And I think that the reality is that the people at the meeting were the people at that meeting, whereas the people on social media, those comments live beyond their initial posting. So all you need is, you know, a comment about where to get a COVID vaccine. Let's say you leave up somebody in town who's well-respected, who's calling that vaccine, you know, a tool of government ill will, right? And that gets to live beyond the immediate moment if theoretically that's the way we're thinking about these FOIA and commenting laws, right? What role can government officials play in moderating social media? And I think that this is sort of one more manifestation of the complications that social media creates for us.
So in the couple minutes we have remaining, you do suggest that Illinois ought to clarify these public record requirements. You also have a suggestion for Facebook, right, about what it could do to help local agencies.
Well, I mean, I think Facebook needs to, among other things, make it possible for local agencies to directly target people in their geographically specific communities, skip over whatever algorithms are getting in the way of engaging content. Almost imagine Facebook like an emergency SMS, like Amber Alert, right? There is a way for Facebook to do this today. If Facebook wanted to give every public health department in the country the ability to send a Facebook message directly to their constituents as a blast, Facebook could do that, right? And so one of the problems is people getting this health information in the mix of all of the other junk and happiness and cat photos and conspiracy theory that are on their platforms. And it's quite possible they may not even see this really critical fact-based information.
And finally, you have some suggestions for, in about 30 seconds or less, but Illinois, you want to see the state setting social media outreach guidelines. Also, local newspapers stepping up, back up here.
Yeah, we need to think about how all of the information providers in our state can work together to get accurate, efficient, and fast information out to people in a way that people can trust and respond and ask questions.
Well, Nikki Usher is a professor of journalism at the in the College of Media at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and is the author of this report, Fighting COVID-19 in Illinois. Also the author of the book, News for the Rich, White, and Blue, How Place and Power Distort American Journalism. You can listen to our conversation about that book from last year on our website, 21stshow.org. Nikki, congratulations again. Thanks for being with us on the show.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
And that is all the time we have for the 21st Show today. Before we go, I do want to urge you again to visit our website, 21stshow.org. You can find today's conversations if you want to share them with someone. You can also find all of our past conversations there. And you can find them in our podcast feeds, which are on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, NPR One. Just search for The 21st. The 21st is produced by Anna Casey, Erica Scalise, and Aiden Choate. Our interns are Zainab Qureshi and Brielle Skullark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thank you to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.